So this is Brian. Dan and I are here with Walter Day and with Steve Wiebe from the movie King of Kong, Fistful of Quarters. And you've seen the movie, hopefully, by now. We're here just to talk to them about some of the topics you don't see covered on the film. I want to start with you, Steve. Maybe you can tell us a little bit. Your background as an engineer, you're a science teacher now. That's a very analytical profession, right? How much analytics goes into preparing for playing a game like Donkey Kong?
Well, there is actually pattern recognition is a big thing with video games. In Donkey Kong, there's trends. There's no exact repeatability of the game, but there's things you notice happening you have to pick up on and understand them in order to predict what will happen when you do certain moves. So that's part of it, pattern recognition. That's a big key to Donkey Kong. Mm-hmm. And with the elevators, actually, there's the springs, which in the movie I show which spring to move on. And there's some physics involved with that. How big of a jump you can get depends on where the spring enters the screen, and you want a big jump, so it makes sense that you would want to go on a spring where the it enters further into the screen. That way you can move quicker and you won't get hit. So there's definitely some problem-solving skills that go into the video games too. So definitely a mathematical mind benefits you in your video game pursuits. Wouldn't you say, Walter?
Well, you know, when people first started playing video games, the media got very interested because, you know, people now getting an introduction to computers. They say some of the first people to become computer literate became computer literate as a result of playing video games.
Sure.
And out of all the attention that the media put on those early people who we'll call the gaming pioneers, the story that they found the most interesting was the competitive side of video game playing, because they found that people were in a war with the games to try and beat the machines. It was man versus machine, the person versus the computer. And I think of all the news stories that were done in the early 80s, late 70s, especially the early 80s, about the new video game phenomena, where most of them seemed to have been about the people who became the first competitors. Even before there were contests involving people trying to win an award or win the contest, there was the contest of the person trying to beat the game. And we saw that in people trying to make world records on asteroids, on Space Invaders, on Missile Command, on those earliest of early games. The big stories that came out first were young man goes 48 hours on single quarter to beat the make game quit or something like that.
Wow.
Lots and lots of stories like that. Lots and lots of stories about people reaching the first Pac-Man split screens, mm-hmm, way back in 1981, 1982. So it was very interesting how the media really latched onto the fact that people were learning computers, but also people were being challenged by computers and beating computers. So it's a very interesting technological focus that they got out of such a sociological phenomena.
Sure. I think that's a great point. I know Dan and myself, we spend a lot of time, you know, playing video games and really pushing our own knowledge of PCs because of video games. I want to ask you specifically, you brought up kill screens and getting to Pac-Man perfect score, which would split the screen. You know, today, that would be a bug. The game probably wouldn't ship. But now, that's kind of revered as this sort of classic symbol of these arcade games. What do you think about kill screens? How many kill screens have you personally witnessed, I would ask?
Well, there's quite a few games that have some sort of kill screen. Like Pac-Man has a kill screen, Donkey Kong has a kill screen. And since everything about it was so new, they didn't realize that they were going to be faced by people mastering the games and that the code was going to run out and that people were going to exhaust the code and there was no place further to go. So the game kind of like just drops dead on the person. So, and it was very interesting because people were claiming all sorts of exorbitant scores on Pac-Man. People were claiming scores that can't be done. We know now that the highest score on Pac-Man is 3,333,360 points. You can't get one single point more. However, before we learned that, people were claiming 5 million points, 8 million points, and 12 million points, and they were getting arcades to sign off on that. So we were kind of in the dark for a while, and we finally learned the ropes and knew that Pac-Man scores could go no higher than 3,333,360 points. So kill screens are interesting. Yes, they were bugs because they just didn't think it that far ahead. You know? And games today have quite a lot of bugs too. Even some ones like Tony Hawk Pro Skater 2 that we did a world championship for some years ago. Mm-hmm. We had to work around all sorts of bugs that was in the game because they develop a game only so far, and then they just keep their fingers crossed and hope for the best.
Sure. They didn't anticipate players like Steve coming along and hitting that kill screen. How many times have you hit the kill screen in Donkey Kong, would you imagine?
Trying to think of all the games. Probably 25 times.
Wow. And do you have to do a hard reset?
Yeah. Well, the game, once you, you know, if you get there with more than one Mario, it'll just go back to that same board and you die again. So once it kills you off, all your Marios, are, the game will end. So
okay.
There's no hard reset necessary. That means start again. So you don't have to unplug the machine. It just ends the game. You put another credit in and you can start again. So it does, it, there's no, like, doesn't crash the machine.
Right.
Just, you just can't get past that point.
Right. So in the Q&A just a minute ago, you told us that your favorite game, of course, is Donkey Kong, and your second favorite is Donkey Kong Jr. What are the differences between Donkey Kong and Donkey Kong Jr.? Is there much of a strategy difference between those two games?
Yeah, Donkey Kong Jr. is a little easier. There's two boards that are exact repeatable patterns, whereas Donkey Kong, the only one that is really a board that you can know what's going to happen is the elevators. That's totally in your control. I mean, sometimes you have a misstep and you die on them, but with Junior, it's a little simpler, it's easier. There's two boards, the springboard, there's one where the patterns of the birds are exact if you do the same movement of the little ape. So the tables are turned. Now you're Donkey Kong Junior's, Donkey Kong's son, Mario's kidnapped Donkey Kong, and you're trying to rescue him. So it's the same concept. You're just navigating different screens. Instead of jumping barrels and climbing ladders, you're climbing up vines and chains, and you're a monkey.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
But it's easy. It's a little easier, and it's not as revered as a high score in Donkey Kong Jr. is not as appreciated as much as the regular Donkey Kong.
Right. And one last question. So, Walter, when you're taking a look at the boards that go into the Donkey Kong machines, what are you looking for? I mean, are there known times that people have been able to hack the machines on the board? I mean, what can you do as a referee to guard against that?
Well, first of all, you just covered a lot of stuff. I mean, that's a very, very big bunch of stuff that actually is almost classically called a can of worms.
Okay.
Because it's so involved and has caused so much, has brought forth so much thought and so much argument, so much worry. Well, first of all, I want to say right now, officially, on this broadcast here, that I've never, ever had a PCB board delivered to my office or to anybody in Twin Galaxies that actually has been proven to have altered ROM sets, okay? I mean, I just have to be frank about that. There's people out there right now actively involved in trying to prove that there are altered ROM sets being used in Donkey Kong play. And so I have never, ever, ever come across a board that actually has the altered ROM sets. If they're out there, then we don't know who's doing them and where they're coming from. If they're out there, we don't know how many there would be, but we've never, ever come across one. But there are people out there who are trying to prove that such a thing exists. So what we do, for instance, in Steve's playing, the board has been approved and analyzed, checked for the ROM set that's in place in it by a person who's an expert named Jeff Kulzwicki. I hope I pronounced it correctly. And he lives down in... I'm trying to remember where he lives. I think he lives in Texas, or is it Arizona? And essentially, he approved of these two boards that we have that we're going to be using for Steve's record attempt tomorrow night. And what he did is he checked the ROM sets to make sure that they're the ones that are classically prescribed for doing normal, competitive Donkey Kong. And we're going by his recommendations and his certification. So those have been sent. Those boards have been approved, and they've been sent by overnight mail, and they're in the package room here in the hotel. And we're going to be filmed taking the boards, receiving the boards from the package room, and then taking them to the machine and opening the package and putting them so that we will have an unbroken, seamless documentation, bit of documentation that shows that the thing came directly from Jeff. Then we came and brought it over the machine, took out the package, put it in the machine, and then they'll check it for technological problems, and Steve will play and make sure it's working right, so that we'll have a an unbroken stream of evidence that we can use as part of our just body of evidence that says Steve Wiebe did this score, and here is the supporting evidence. So it's a very interesting level of headache having to have people go through this. But there's just some fun sides to it too, I think. Or we'll see.
All right. Well, thank you, Walter. Thank you, Steve. And Steve, good luck tomorrow on trying to break your record again here at Mix 08. Thank you very much.
Thanks.